Hello and welcome to episode 34 of It Depends, How to Present at Tech Conferences. I am Daniel Pritchett and I'm here with David Mo Mohundra.
Hello, how's it going?
All right. I always like that your GitHub username is Dr. Mohundra.
Me too. I like that.
I'm also here with Brian Langford.
Hello.
And before I get to telling you who else I'm here with, don't forget we have a Twitter account, @ClearFunction. Use hashtag #ItDepends. Check in with us. We will check in with you. Hi, Ben. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, Daniel. It's good to be with you.
Excellent. So Ben has a great outline for this whole episode, and I'm going to ask Ben to give us the first cue, and we'll take it away.
Well, so I think it would be we'd be remiss if we didn't at first say why you should care. You downloaded this episode about presenting at tech conferences. Maybe that's something you've never done if you're listening. Maybe that's something you're wanting to do, and you're listening because you want to know how to do it well. Or maybe that's something you've done a bunch of times, and you could send in some good feedback for us.
Yeah.
But I guess just for that first two groups of people, which I imagine are most people, why would they want to listen to this, and why would they want to present at tech conferences?
I actually see it kind of as, you know, maybe presenting gives you an opportunity, kind of a learning opportunity. So like a topic that maybe you're somewhat interested in, maybe, you know, that you might just want to spend some more time on to learn about and then be able to talk about it. It kind of goes in kind of what we do here with lunch and learns.
Right. I was thinking the same thing.
We'll take the time to kind of dig into a tech or topic or something that folks are interested in, and then be able to know enough about it to be able to talk about it in front of some people. So I think it could be a good way to learn about stuff.
So why should you want to present at a conference? One of the first things you'll always hear is that it gives you a chance to practice your skills, to really learn things at a deeper level that you might only know superficially. Like once you start figuring out how to explain it to someone, you get a better grasp of it. There's networking and visibility benefits. Like you're now known as someone who knows something about the thing you're talking about. I found when you are at a conference as a presenter, it's much easier to strike up conversations with peers at the conference. And by peers, I mean attendees, not speakers. People are like, oh, you're that guy, or you talked about this thing, we should talk about it. And my favorite part about conference attendance is usually talking to people about shared work interests. And so this makes that type of socialization a lot easier.
I agree. Networking is easier at conferences when you are a speaker, because there is, maybe it doesn't fit all personality types by any means, but you can just go to a conference and you can see people will go up and talk to them afterwards, whereas, you know, otherwise you're just sort of in the background. So
yeah.
Whether or not you're actually, you know, an authority on anything, it's just people are willing to ask you questions because you are willing to talk about something.
Right.
And there is a lot of truth to, you know, for example, we do lunch and learns here, and we encourage everyone to try to present those. And a big part is just, you know, it's fun and we like to have lunch together. But another part is there is another level of understanding when you have to present that information to someone else. It's Do you know it well enough to explain it? Do you know it well enough to explain it to someone who doesn't know what you're talking about? It's just a really great strategy for learning something. Gathering the notes and all of that together, synthesizing right. it.
And even just some of the questions you might get asked, you know, not that you have to have all the answers, obviously, in the presentation, but sometimes taking, you know, the takeaway after the presentation might, you know, those questions might have sort of got you motivated to kind of look into that and more and kind of figure out, oh, there's this other thing out there I didn't realize, you know, that someone brought up. That's kind of interesting. And so it could lead you to learning more about that topic or even looking into something maybe related to it that might be of interest.
Maybe I can speak as the canonical person who hasn't spoken at a tech conference yet, because you guys, several of you, often encourage me to do that. And I think it's a kind of imposter syndrome that has prevented me from doing it thus far. And really that works itself out in two ways. One is I don't know anything well enough that someone else would want to hear from me on that topic. Mm-hmm. Turns out that's not true. And you guys, that's one thing you guys push back on. And then the other one is kind of like you were just talking about, Brian, I won't know everything about it. So when someone asks a question, I got to be the guy who knows all the answers. Otherwise I can't present on it. So would any of you want to speak to either of those?
pretty much every conference I go to, at the end of someone's talk, someone will say, "This is my first talk ever," and I'm usually surprised.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I can't tell the difference. Absolutely. There's lots of people who know what they're doing and don't project a vibe of being a super experienced speaker, and then there's the opposite, where people in the first time are great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
But also, I would recommend, if you're nervous, there's lower stress ways to get started, like start with a lunch and learn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Take a step up to your local meetup. Do a local in-town conference before going to a destination conference. I mean, there are people who jump right into national destination conferences with big talks with
sure,
right. highly paid attendees that paid a lot to be there. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do that if right. you want to ease yeah. into it.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Also, just in terms of not knowing all the answers, I've found that some of the people that I respect the most are the ones who are honest enough to say they don't know everything.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It's just that awareness of, I don't know everything about this topic.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people out there who actually, you know, maybe literally wrote the book about right. the topic.
Yep.
But that's not the majority of the people. And that's certainly not the majority of the speakers at conferences.
And mm-hmm. even if you did write the book, it's probably healthier for everyone for you to approach it as a fellow enthusiast or someone who's experienced something. Like, maybe if you were personally selling $1,000 tickets to your own speech, you might want to pretend to know everything, but I've always found it much easier to involve the audience. Somebody asks me a question about an edge case of something that applies to what I'm doing, and I say, it sounds like you know a lot more about this than I do. Let's talk about it. Right? I don't.
Yeah.
I try to figure out how to do it in such a way it doesn't sound like I'm fighting with them, or like, mm-hmm. I think that guy knows, or we'll make a note of that. Maybe we can figure it out together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Don't
you probably even just tell your experience, like you were saying earlier, yeah. about just telling an experience you had with whatever the topic,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, you don't have to have all the answers, but you might have a story about it. You might have an experience about it. So I think that helps.
Yeah, I think that's really good on maybe why people who haven't would want to present. And if you're wanting to, why it would be a good thing that you would do so. So let's move into sort of the process. I kind of lined out sort of from start to finish how you would go from couch to presenting at a tech conference. If I can call it that.
You download the Couch to Presenter app for your iPhone.
It's going to take a lot of training, mm-hmm. a lot of
hydration.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. That's right. Yep. So now that we've got the right protein bars in place, we can start with step one is picking a conference. So how do you decide where would be the best fit for you to present?
I'd say it depends on your motivations behind becoming a speaker. Are you marketing or networking or learning or earning? I mean, there's big conferences that you're going to have to fly across the country for, and everyone's paying $500 a head. There's small conferences in your backyard that last half a day that cost little to nothing.
It feels to me like technology is a big consideration here.
Yeah.
So if mm-hmm. you're, you know, we do a lot of .NET here, for example. So a more Microsoft-heavy conference would be a better fit for us than,
okay.
Say, maybe like a more Python-heavy conference, just as an example. Not mm-hmm. that we wouldn't do that also, but certainly is a better fit for us.
There's different conferences that... there's conferences that are by nature technology agnostic. There's mm-hmm. conferences. We went to Southeast Ruby this a few months ago. Obviously, Ruby heavy, but there was
right.
a few other things that were brought up there as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Something that we often do here is we'll sit down in a meeting for an hour or so, and a few of us will sort of ahead of time research basically from things in the area all the way up to big dollar destination conferences. Mm-hmm. And we'll just sort of, sometimes we'll vote, sometimes we'll talk through like, okay, which ones align best with our interests for the year.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're on a team that's going to be going together,
right.
You know, get everyone else's input. If you're doing this on your own as sort of you're growing your own profession, you're growing your own, you know, career, then think about what your end game is.
Right.
If it's just, you know, training, then, you know, I would recommend that a lot of the regional conferences, you know, an hour or two drive away are going to be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
There's great value for your money for some of those things. So,
and they'll probably have a little bit lower barrier to getting accepted.
Absolutely.
Like if it's a multi-track conference, maybe that makes it a lot easier to get in.
Yeah, I was going to bring up multi-track. So mm-hmm. that to me is another really big consideration is what level of detail or depth or what level of expertise are you expecting
right.
for your talk? So if it's a 101 introductory talk, then make sure that you're not going to a 301, 401 conference, right, to present it. And vice versa, of course.
I don't know if I've ever seen a conference that is all high level or all low level, but worth thinking about.
Yeah, there's definitely breadth, and it's not just going to be all one or the other, mm-hmm. but they're certainly, they lean certain ways versus others.
That's fair. I got a rejection from a destination conference once that basically said, this is first year stuff, and people are paying $500 mm-hmm. and flying to see it, and they're not going to be happy they spent their money on your talk. And I was like, wow, I didn't think about that, but I can't argue it at all.
Sure, right. Yeah, okay, so Mo, you mentioned briefly, like last year we went to Southeast Ruby, and this upcoming year we're planning on going to CodeStock in 2018. And so we generally, you know, we have our conference picked, let's say, and now we need to move into step two, which is selecting a topic.
Okay.
So how do you know, how do you decide what you're going to present on?
Ideally, there is an alignment of interest and maybe history with the topic. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily have to be, but I would say don't try to speak on something you're not at least interested in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for sure.
Just because you want to have fun with it, it's going to be at least take some time for prep. Right. So different people prepare in different ways. We can talk about that later in terms of preparing actually for the presentation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're the type that likes to write the whole speech out ahead of time, you don't want to feel like it's just, you know, drudgery to try to get all of that together. So find something you're interested in learning about mm-hmm. or that you already know something about.
Yeah, those are the two for me. Either something you know more than most people about and you just want to share because you think other people could benefit from learning about it and sharing with you, or something that's maybe an emerging technology that you're interested in and you want an excuse to learn more about it and then share that.
Right. Yeah, that's the example I first thought of was I do a lot of React here, mm-hmm. and React Native is sort of still emergent-ish, and that would be a good reason to, presenting on it would be a good reason to learn it and build something with it and then share my experience as I learned it kind of thing. Okay, let's say we've got our topic chosen, mm-hmm. and we know which conference we're wanting to present at. Now we need to submit our talk. So the call for presenters is open, mm-hmm. and we've got to submit an abstract, a title and an abstract.
Right.
And How do we craft the appropriate abstract? This is step three.
I'd say mm-hmm. step two and a half is don't write the whole talk before you get accepted.
Totally agree.
There are people that will spend 100 hours making a perfect talk and shop it around until it hits. But unless you're very sure that's what you want to do, make the abstract. If it gets taken up, then you've got some validation that other people are interested in, then do it.
Something to add on to that, too, is the people who are doing that are probably already doing that as maybe they own a consulting business mm-hmm. or something like that. So it is a core part of their business, and it's like trying to get their name
They'll hang on to that abstract,
yeah,
even though they spent
This topic, I think, is more for people who are wanting to get into it.
Yeah, fair. If there's a story that you just really need to tell for your business, then you tell it. And maybe a talk is not the right venue, but you still work on it. But if you're just looking for an excuse or a way to break into giving a talk, then you're a little more open to finding what people want to hear.
Yeah,
I think if you are going to just spend a little bit of time to put together this abstract and not spend a ton of time mm-hmm. trying to perfect it, just so that you can make sure it gets, you know, accepted before mm-hmm. you continue that. Don't write yourself into a corner, I guess, with it.
Yeah.
If you can help it, just sort of, you kind of keep it. I mean, I don't mean to say like too generic, but, mm-hmm. You know, maybe not promise necessarily a lot of things that you might regret later after it got accepted that you've got to sort of like work hard to make sure you cover those things. So anyway, just a small bit of advice on that. I find that actually doing the abstract is like one of the hardest things to kind of get started on. Cause it's like, I've got the general topic idea of mm-hmm. what I kind of want to talk about, but sitting down and actually start thinking about when am I actually going to do and describe it's hard sometimes to kind of come up with that. I think getting feedback from other people helps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all would share anything about that. If you found that getting other people to consider your ideas is helpful or not.
I find that the best feedback I've gotten on abstracts has been paired with rejection notices. I rarely get just a random friend or coworker to give me great feedback on, I like this proposal, make these changes, and it'll be great. Mm. It's more like, we pick 20 talks that were more relevant to our plan, and this is why, and this is what you didn't have, or what made us worry. Sometimes it's been, we weren't sure that you, who we don't know, would do a good enough job to justify the slot, or one that really sticks with me is the conference organizer would like to be able to take your abstract and copy and paste it into the brochure when it's time to make the conference. Like, if your abstract sells itself to the point where someone who's thinking about buying a ticket can read that paragraph and think, wow, I really want to learn that from Brian, then that's an easy win for the organizer. Mm-hmm. Same thing for if it can be read by somebody at the conference reading the brochure and they're like, oh, should I go to talk A or talk B? Well, they know exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to think about is almost, I don't know, like, let's say you're looking at the TV Guide channel or whatever I used to watch on cable 10 years ago. It just says, in 3 seconds or less, what's the pitch for this show? Why are you going to quit scrolling through and watch this one?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. So to me, I try to speak to the attendee. This is who you are. This is who I am. This is what we're going to do together. This is maybe the problem that you have that we're going to help you solve. And this is what you'll be able to do at the end of it that you can't do already.
Right.
So it's got to be more than just factual. It's aspirational. This is why you should come to this. This is what you would learn how to benefit you.
Yeah, given that you're sitting here and you've got 5 talks you could be going to or 10 conferences you could be buying a ticket for, this is the positive vibe that I'm giving you or you're taking from me or whatever to participate in this.
And how long do I have to do that? How long should an abstract be in, like, number of sentences? Is it, or number of paragraphs? Is it two paragraphs?
I think it's usually a couple hundred words.
Okay.
You know, like a third of a page of...
I usually shoot for sort of 2 paragraphs, each 2-3 sentences long.
Right.
I usually, I like to have a tone presented from it, whether it's like a sort of, hey, I'm going to have a little bit of humor here, or this one's just, it's also thinking about how, you know, what sort of strengths you might have as a presenter. You may not know those yet if you've never presented, but just sort of talk about what the technology is briefly, assuming it is a technology talk. And then the second one is what we'll do.
Yeah.
Well, Mo, if you're going to emphasize your strengths, how do you accurately work in your GIF game in an abstract?
Anticipation. I mean, there's some of the ones that I've been thinking through, like, just, you know, even like font choice. One of the abstracts we as a group met to review, I had one talking about, like, how do you talk to your kids about something? And it was obviously a joke, but I've already been thinking, like, maybe I could have, like, you know, construction paper theme or something. Whether or not it will actually come out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, will I spend the time to make it look that good? I have no idea. It depends on if it gets accepted, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It helps a lot to think about who's reviewing it, what they want, and what the review process looks like.
Yes, agree.
Do they have a Google Doc with 100 rows and they just go through and they do a blind review and they think, you know, rate this from 1 to 5 and we don't even know who it is?
Yeah.
Right. That's pretty common. You'll do a blind review of the content regardless of who it is. And then you'll go back and review the people and think, well, we know this person. They're cool. So they get a +1 or at least they're good. And if you get someone you don't know, then you think, maybe we got to think twice about that one. And then, again, the higher the ticket price is, the more likely they are to go back and think, anybody I've ever heard of before gets a big bump because we got to sell these tickets or else we're going to be in debt. Mm. I have a whole set of theories on different ways to get on the bill at a high-dollar conference. Number one is be famous. Number two is work for a brand everyone's heard of. Like, say, it'd be easier to get in as DHH, creator of Rails. People know him. Mm-hmm. Barring that, it'd be great to get on as somebody who works at Basecamp because they know the brand Basecamp. And then beyond that, there's being a core member of a well-known project.
Right.
And then finally, it's usually having a non-traditional, interesting story. So maybe it's, here's a crazy robot I built, or I was a chef and decided to start programming last year. I saw a keynote on that a year ago, and that's interesting because most of the people there have more traditional CS backgrounds. You know, I've been programming since this age, studied something tech-related in school, been programming regular programming jobs for a few years. So differentiating yourself at that level really helps.
All right, so we've chosen where we want to present. We've selected the topic we're going to present on. We've built the perfect, beautiful 2-paragraph abstract. And we've submitted it, and we've been accepted. We're going to be a presenter at Conference XYZ. Now I've got to master this topic. That's step four.
Wait till the week. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that.
Day of.
I'd say.
Have you already mastered it? Are you already an expert? If so, yeah. Good job.
I have some exposure to it, but okay. I need to learn enough to present on it in a way that other people who don't have exposure to it can understand okay. and be benefited from.
I'd start with trying to figure out an outline, like how much time are you trying to fill?
Yes.
Who's agreed. The audience? Yeah. What are you going to say to them? And then if you identify a gap, like, I'm definitely going to go have to read up on this one thing so yeah. that I can give a credible answer to it. Like, I gave a talk on Let's Encrypt a year ago
mm-hmm.
when it was fairly new to end users. And I knew what it was, basically, but I'd only used it a tiny bit. So I figured these are going to be the questions that I would ask if I were attending yeah. this talk. So I have to do a little bit of research so I can say I tried this and I can pay lip service to that. And here's 10 pages you can look up if you want to know more.
That's a really good point. I do think coming up with an outline first, if you try to master it and then come out up with the outline, you may be committing yourself to a lot more work than is necessary for the mm-hmm. presentation. If you have a rough outline, you can sort of aim for those things and maybe fill in the gaps as necessary. But there is a whole conversation online about should you present on something you aren't already an expert on?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, we already talked about that a little bit, but, you know, preparing for a presentation at a conference is a great way to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of almost wonder if you already have an outline, if you created that really beautiful, perfect abstract, you know, in some ways,
right.
maybe in your head, yeah. like I'm going to mm-hmm. talk about
you might.
This.
That's and true.
In this yeah. presentation, you're going to see us go through this new, you know, mm-hmm. way of doing things or whatever. We didn't talk about this, but sometimes folks put in their abstract that there'll be some live coding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of an interesting sort of creative way to sort of get folks' attention. I think some mm-hmm. folks enjoy going I guess if you're brave enough to go in there and do live coding, mm-hmm. of course, you know, that might take a little bit of courage to
yeah.
to want to do that. But, I don't know. I just think that's kind of an interesting way of doing your presentation too. Like it's not so much so scripted
mm-hmm.
and you're having to spend a lot of time just showing them a bunch of content on a yeah. slide. It's more of just like, here's some general mm-hmm. ideas. Let's go check it out and see how it works. And
yeah,
right now, you know, whatever.
Live coding seems to be a pretty polarizing issue for conference talks. I hear
that's
people
true.
Complaining about it, people nervous about it. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine a nightmare scenario where, let's say your whole talk was dialing into your Raspberry Pi server in your closet at home, and somebody bumped the router, and now you're just offline, so you don't have a talk. But
yeah,
I've never actually sat in a talk that looked like that, where someone was like, I was going to do all this, I had a single point of failure, it failed, my talk is over.
I have seen one
yeah?
like that
Was
once.
It that bad?
It was not dialing into something, but it was demoing in a specific technology.
Yeah.
And like virtual machine wouldn't boot.
Oh, no.
And it was just, and it was clear that there wasn't actually a whole lot of content past
yeah.
it.
Like I'm going to log in and drive around for half an hour. Oops,
yeah.
I can't log in.
But for me personally, I mean, there's something about seeing even a little bit of live code. I personally get annoyed by just snippets. I
yeah.
know that is a safe thing to do
right.
so that, you know, you're not like typing haphazardly or something up mm-hmm. there. There is a balance, though. I
yeah.
mean, if all I see is slides, I don't know. It doesn't feel as close to the technology for
right.
me. But
it's hard to really get engaged if you just think someone's reading their note cards. So I like to try to figure out exactly how much live demo is appropriate. I usually like to do a demo.
But have backups.
Yeah.
I mean,
so if
you
it's going to be some sort of interactive thing, you could do a screencast of here's
right.
me typing for 30 seconds, here's the input and the output. You've got that as a backup. Mm-hmm. If
a,
not,
a
I'll often
of
do screenshots of the things I intend to show off mm-hmm. so I can at least describe what I meant to show.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But in general, I will talk about concepts, big picture stuff, slides with bullets, and then I'll say, now watch me do this thing. And about half the time it doesn't work. And that's always fun for me because then I can think through it live. Like usually the not working is, this is something I'm only kind of know what I'm doing, and mm-hmm. I have to remember, like, oh, I typed this wrong, or forgot to reset my server or whatever. And that's right. fun to me and to a lot of people because you see behind the curtain of the day-to-day of doing the thing. But I've never really set myself up for a situation where I have a big flashy demo that just completely tanks. That would be hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say in terms of actually learning, though, like if you don't know it well or there's, I mean, there's sort of three categories out there that I can think of. One is other people who've talking about a topic.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you can find lots of, say, on YouTube or something where someone mm-hmm. has put together a presentation. You can go see what they've said about it. Right. There's blog posts. There are still books in some cases, depending on the topic. But, you know, just some good ways, you know, depending on what it is, there may be open source examples or libraries.
Right.
Those are some really good things where, say, you're talking about, like, Ben, you mentioned React Native. Maybe there's an open source to-do app or something, you know. Like, especially if it's a community one, maybe that's sort of, you could structure your presentation around, let's walk through this. Let's implement one of these on our own or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I would say don't try to, unless it is like a workshop style talk that you're giving,
mm-hmm.
like 100% mastering is, I think, overshooting what's necessary. It's, something in mind.
Giving a talk at a conference is a step on the path to mastery, but it's a bit too much to ask to totally master a topic and then give a talk on it.
All right. So we've figured out basically the content of the presentation we want to give. Now, how do we put it all into slides? This mm-hmm. is step five, preparing a slide deck.
Choose your presentation medium. Is it PowerPoint? Keynote?
Reveal.js?
Yeah.
Yeah, can I say a quick word about Reveal.js? No one's paying me money to say this. Oh. I like Reveal.js because it has the concept of slides going horizontally and mm-hmm. vertically,
yeah.
Especially the vertical set of slides. Right. Because what you could do to start out to create your slide deck is sometimes you don't really know how many slides you're going to have.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't want to have too many. Okay, you know, and some of it could be driven off of this outline we just talked about, where you have a slide, at least going to have a slide per outline item, right, of right. some kind, potentially. But you'll obviously have more than that. So sometimes what I like to do is, if I've, just so I can kind of keep brainstorming of what I'm going to talk about or whatever, mm-hmm. I'll keep adding slides, but I might add them vertically.
Yes.
So that way, if I'm running short on time,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of in a side pocket.
Yeah.
And you don't have to bring up those if you don't have time. You can obviously go horizontally immediately and go to the next section pretty quickly. So I kind of like that concept. Yeah. It kind of keeps it flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
I do the
small plug for Reveal.js.
Interesting.
I do the same thing, except that I come up with my rough outline.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's done the last few presentations I've given, which are sort of like a intro to basic to advanced, I'll have the top down be sort of each high level bullet point.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can dig in. And if at any point it's time to abandon, you jump to the next section.
Yeah. Same here.
It feels more like choosing the slide medium. But I would say if you're not familiar with Reveal.js, it's the way that I think a lot of us here do it is you actually write your slides in Markdown.
Yeah.
So if you like textual format, you should check it out. If you prefer typing in Word or or some sort of like word processing tool,
mm-hmm.
you might want to stick with PowerPoint or Keynote.
Yeah.
Just use something that you can work in effectively and quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, Reveal is definitely a advanced tool that only fits certain interests. I wouldn't sell it to anyone. I mean, I use it. If you have questions, I'll talk to you about it all day, but I'm not going to sell it to you. You have to decide you're into it, and then we can talk. Same with Vim.
That's @dpritchett on Twitter.
Yes. #Ben.
Talk about Vim now?
Yeah.
Okay. No Vim. This is a no Vim zone.
Sad face.
Okay.
All right. So now we've got our slide deck, and it's beautifully crafted with the appropriate amount of GIFs, and hopefully it hasn't increased in size so much that it takes forever to pull the Git repo down.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That's a good point, Ben. You're sharing your slides on the internet. People can look at them on GitHub.
Unless it's a private repo.
That's pretty cool. So with Reveal.js. If you used a markdown-based slide presentation format, people can easily consume them from GitHub.
Yes.
If you're doing more traditional PowerPoint-style linear slides, you might want something like SlideShare.
Yeah.
Which I think will crawl to scrape the text so people can still search it.
I'm going to give one more maybe piece of advice on your slide deck. Don't read your slides when you're presenting. People can read. I would try to use as less words as possible on your slide points, and you do more of the explaining in your presentation rather than just reading your bullets off. Anyway, it should seem fairly obvious, but I just think it's worth pointing out.
I do the same. I mean, I use it kind of like a cue card, and then I ad-lib. Mm-hmm. Other people use it like a cue card, and they've got 500 words or presenter notes viewable only to them on the second screen. I'll probably always be ad-libbing my presentations with a rough outline and some visual aids. But there are people.
There are.
And some of those people think that that is the moral imperative when giving a talk, that you owe your audience 100 hours of prep time. People will say that to you.
I think if I were ever asked to give a keynote, I might want to do that.
Fair.
But it depends on it depends on the responsibility and thank you. And the level of depth and the topic and my familiarity with the topic beforehand.
Right. What if Bill Gates showed up and gave an off-the-cuff speech? Would you be mad that he didn't spend 3 weeks prepping to talk to you?
Okay, that's a good point. But what if Bill Gates was at Build?
Right.
Then I would expect him to prep something.
Maybe.
But those are, I mean, if it's like a keynote or something, then there is something being told and there's like, but if it's, I mean, if I'm at a Build or a Rails conf or something like that, where it's a deep dive into a tech, I also expect to see some actual live coding. I mean, it's a different type of thing. It's like, you know, is it a workshop? Is it a, hey, come check out this technology here. You're not familiar with it. Mm-hmm. It gets back to the, you know, who is your audience and what are you trying to do with your presentation?
Could you imagine the internet mob and the pitchforks and torches if Tim Cook just ad-libbed the next WWDC?
That's a keynote.
Yeah, and people are paying $1,000 to be there.
Oh, so if someone pays to be there ahead of time, then I should prepare. That's what you're saying.
No, I think we're getting off track, but I think there's always going to be a disconnect between the expectations of the speaker and the attendees, and they're not all going to be the same.
You're saying how much we should prepare, not Boolean we should prepare versus we shouldn't.
Yeah, everyone should prepare. Yes. And I know a guy who will do 40 hours making a sample project that does crazy stuff, and then he'll spend a few hours making slides, and it's always showing off this thing he built. And I respect that. Other people might think you should mock it up in an hour and then spend 40 hours talking about the thing you didn't actually build.
There's sort of a continuum, I think.
Yeah.
It's the... you have to know where you're... If you're going to a larger conference, I'll put it this way. If I were going to a larger conference, if I were keynoting, I would spend a lot more time on what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I might not show as much live coding in a keynote or something. Not that I've ever given a keynote. If I'm at a regional conference and I'm talking about a technology in depth... I'm going to spend more time in code and let the, you know, I'll spend a lot more time building a project or something like that that actually shows whatever is being done. So
I'm now just trying to picture the Mohundro conference continuum in my head.
It loops back on itself? Not really.
So I will say that one of my Ruby heroes, Katrina Owen, her first conference talk, she said she spent 100 hours preparing for it.
That sounds terrifying.
It was amazing. It was like at a regional conference in Europe somewhere. It was amazing. And she's instantly Ruby famous. She's like on the One Big Ruby podcast. She goes to all the national conferences. Now she's a self-employed Ruby trainer who runs her own site and everything. So it's possible for people to just jump right into being permanently internet famous for giving well-crafted presentations. So it's a calculated decision you might want to make, but I wouldn't say that every talk deserves it or requires it out of respect for everyone participating.
It's not a categorical imperative.
There you go.
All right, we've got our slides crafted perfectly. Let's move into the final step 6, giving the presentation. Do you guys have any specific presentation tips and tricks, things you should and should not do?
Bring display adapters.
Ah, good idea.
or at least have a buddy.
In the Boy Scouts, we used to say, be prepared.
That's right. That's the Boy Scout motto, right?
Yes. Oops.
Always go first. Then you can enjoy the conference.
you don't want to be stressful. Yeah.
That's good, too.
Especially if you haven't already written all the slides or whatever. I see a lot of speakers who are nervous until they give their talk, and then they're like, oh, I can finally enjoy the next hour or 2 days or whatever it is.
This might be a little awkward, but you might not want to, eat, food ahead of time and, just be, burping all over the conference. I mean, your talk. I'm just little things like. I know some people who have the 1 o'clock, they'll just wait and not, even if you're at all nervous, which, I mean, some people aren't, but just.
Most people are. I mean.
Yeah.
Are people who aren't nervous even going to listen to a podcast, or are they just going to show up and deliver their awesome talk and write up?
I don't know. Maybe they're already 100% confidence,
Right. So one thing that really helps me is to socialize heavily at the conference before the talk. Hopefully, if I recognize half people in the room because I've already talked to them in the hallway, it makes the whole thing a lot more comfortable and laid back for me, because I can ad lib and say, oh, I know Jane there in the third row knows about this, and I can, delegate hard questions to people in the other, in the room. I can have personal back and forth. It gives it a more communal vibe. I often aim for a conversation more than just a lecture.
And I think, don't be afraid to say I don't know to questions. I mean, it's okay. You don't need to know. All the answers. You're not going to know all the answers. And so
you might, here's some other things just to be aware of. Are you a pacer? Do you stand in one place? Mm-hmm. Do you fidget? Something I discovered is when I'm giving presentations or talking, if I have I have a watch that I will just play with. It's just know what your little ticks are, so that you can sort of be more in control. If you're pacing and you are standing in front of a mic, audio is going to be all over the place. If you have just some things to think about, just the logistics of it. I mean, it's something else. This is more in terms of preparing the slides, but if the lighting is bad, maybe prepare to switch your color scheme over so that it's more visible.
Yeah. I was going to suggest I think what I did on the last one was I actually went to the room before the
scope it out ahead of time.
Yeah, I went to the room to get the actual room I was going to be in to make sure that I had the proper cables.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And then, lighting, that's a good thing to kind of look at. Like, if you've got a high contrast you may need to change some
stuff. Same thing with certain projectors, too. I can remember a couple slides I've seen have been cut off pretty significantly because of projectors. So if you can test that stuff out beforehand, that's really helpful. Because that's an easy thing to go fix. It just takes time to do it.
Right.
And you can't do it right before you're going to give your talk.
Right. A couple of just generic rules I have to remind myself of to stay calm and present are things like don't turn your back on the audience. It's really easy for me to just start staring at the screen and having a conversation with myself about the notes I wrote last time. But if I look over my shoulder, think about it, and maybe wave an arm about it, it keeps me grounded a bit.
So, I mean, related to that, something that I have tried before, I'm not as good at, is PowerPoint has, the presentation mode. Mm-hmm. Reveal.js does too, where you can have another window up.
Yeah.
But you don't want that showing to your audience. So that usually means that you're running with your screen extended and you have your slides on the other one. The problem I've got with that is I have, maybe it's a juggling, you're usually facing the audience, and the screen is behind you, so you move your cursor to the right, and then you look behind you, and it starts going the wrong way, and suddenly, it's just little things. So I've found, for me personally, it's easier for me to mirror my display, but it's just little things that, until you get there the first time, you don't even think about.
Right.
If you're in, showing it to people around a conference room at your works, it's not going to be the same as when you're standing up in front of them. So it's little things to be aware of. Especially if you're nervous and things feel off, it can really make you feel like, oh, no, everything's wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's just don't panic, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd say if you've got nervous tics that you can't overcome, then you can just lean into it and say, hi, my name's David, and playing with this watch keeps me from freaking out, so let's all have a good time together,
If I pass out, just
I'm going to delegate you to give the backup talk once I fall
out. That's right.
And really being self-effacing and engaging with the audience is how I stay calm enough to get through a talk. Another thing I have to remind myself to do is slow down.
Yeah.
A talk that takes me an hour among friends will take me 20 minutes in front of strangers. I have to build in opportunities to engage the audience, like show of hands, who does this, who does that, does anyone have a story? Like, if I can come up with 3 or 4 or 5 different ways to get the audience thinking and participating, that helps me slow down. It helps me keep them engaged.
Yeah, I think that's a good bit. Yeah, I do tend to do the same thing. I'll just rush through it, and before I know it, it's over. Oh, time for lunch. Okay.
Yeah. 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Well, these are really good tips, guys. Thanks for all that info. We've covered a lot of ground today. Really trying to go from start to finish, couch to presentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Picking the conference, selecting a topic, crafting an abstract, mastering the topic, preparing a slide deck, and then finally giving the actual presentation itself.
Yeah.
And we even got to talk about why you would want to do such a thing to begin with. So if this talk has helped you out or has motivated you to or excited you to present at a tech conference, reach out to us on Twitter. We'd love to hear your story, and you can join the conversation at ClearFunction, #ItDepends. Thanks, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by Clear Function. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.